Greetings, fellow captains, and welcome back to Rank Amateur. It has been a while. What are we running on? 3 months now that I haven't uploaded? It's been every week. It's like, oh man, I should really upload, but man, I don't have time to do this. I have to get these projects done or something like that. So it's been pretty rough. Between, January 15th and March 9th, I got exactly one day off of doing stuff. And I don't mean like, oh, I was working or something like that, like, or I was traveling. No, like, I was either at school or at work every day. And I'm not talking like, oh, I went for like 2 hours, something like that. Minimum of 6 hours. Like, minimum. So it's been exhausting, and I've just come to the conclusion that, yeah, I can't really do that anymore. So I'm making some changes and things to my schedule, lightening my load, and just taking things a little less seriously. I'm kind of suffering from Jimmy Carter syndrome. And for those of you who are maybe not as well-versed in U.S. politics or don't even reside in the United States, Jimmy Carter is one of our presidents who was in... He's actually the oldest living president right now, but he was in... He served, was it between like 76 and 80, which is really 77 through 81. But so he served, and he's a really good guy, and he does a lot of great things for charity, and he's just a swell dude. Not a very good president, though, in most people's opinion. Now, there's obviously it's politics, so you have everyone who takes their views. But more or less, the moral of the story is that he micromanaged everything. So he had these big visions, and not a whole lot got done because he wanted to manage everything, so it was perfect. So what he did do was usually really good, but he didn't do a lot. Reagan, obviously, after him was the polar opposite, just didn't manage, he barely managed anything, he just had all these big ideas and just and had people take their own leads, and that led to Contra and all sorts of weird stuff. But more or less, and I've been doing that with my college work, and it's been, like, taking a huge toll on me mentally, so that's what I'm not going to be doing anymore. What does this mean for the podcast, however? Well, it means that it's not dead. The podcast isn't dead. I don't have plans to kill it anytime in the near future. I plan to keep doing this pretty much as long as I play World of Warships, which I'm sure will eventually stop as life changes and stuff, but it's definitely going to be different. My goal is to ensure that there's no more hour-long episodes or anything like that. That's not going to happen anymore. I don't have the time to do that. I don't have the resources to do that anymore. Probably going to end up doing a little less in the naval history portion of it, just because that takes the longest and longest research and stuff. So more of a crash course version of that, just going over the interesting parts of it. And honestly, I think I'm probably suffering from listener loss just because of people not wanting to hear me, and fair enough, drone on just forever about some obscure ship or something like that that maybe not all of you are interested in. So I hope that I made like a crash course of that. Does a little better, and I know that when I do things that are exclusively for World of Warships, I tend to get more listens on that, or at least more complete listens on that than I do for doing naval history things. So you can expect shorter form things. I'm going to try and keep it maybe around like 25 minutes or so, mainly focusing a little more on World of Warships. Definitely going to still include naval history in where it's applicable, but there might be some episodes where I do a fake ship or something like that, and I don't include any naval history portions of it at all. That is definitely in the possibility, and if you're really here for just the naval history, I'm sorry, but that takes way too long to research, so probably going to start cutting a little bit of that out, but definitely it's still going to be included, just not like down to nitty-gritty. Anyways, so what are we doing today? We are going to be doing an update on the Schorenhorst, because I did get the Schorenhorst 43 over the Christmas events. I think pretty much everyone who played even a little bit did. And then we're going to be doing the Yoshino. Yes, I got the Yoshino in addition to like a plethora of other ships. Lazo, Orkin we know we have. I'm trying to think of how many ships I got, because it's been like 3 months since I played World of Warships. Oh yeah, that's right. Between January 15th and March 9th, I didn't play any video games at all. I didn't have time to. So, it's been a while, and things have changed in World of Warships. I unfortunately missed the Russian Badger events. I wish I could have, but I just didn't have time to grind that out. And I know it wasn't that much of a grind, but I literally did not have time to play that. even that little bit to get his commander. So I'm hoping there's an opportunity to buy it soon, or maybe sometime. And I did also notice that USS Wisconsin, or at least one of my friends messaged me, USS Wisconsin is being added, which is amazing because that ship is named for my home state, is partially funded by my home state, and I have actually been to it down in Norfolk, Virginia, and it's like literally right next to the naval base there, which is one of the largest, I think it is the largest naval base in the world. So it's very impressive. If you're in the Norfolk area, highly recommend you take the boat tour. Do not take the bus tour. You don't get to see the ships on the bus tour as much. You just see them off in the distance, like behind the gates and stuff, because the MPs don't let you in. Yeah, but take the boat tour. It's very awesome. Go to USS Wisconsin, especially at Christmas season, because they decorate the ship insanely well. Very nice place to go, and the museum attached to it is also amazing. I think it's the Nauticus Naval History Museum, Maritime Museum. Forget what its official name is, but yeah, very cool, very well done. Highly recommend it. Anyways, I'm excited for it to be added, and I was ready to hand over my money and purchase it outright, and then they put it in the dockyard. I'm like, are you serious? So now a person who doesn't have time to grind is going to either have to grind or cough up an insane amount of money to get it. So, I told myself years ago, if they ever add the Wisconsin, I'm buying it regardless of price, just because. And it doesn't even look like it's really going to be that good of a ship because it has terrible armor and it's an Iowa tier 10. I mean, we'll see. We'll see what's going on with it. Can't really judge it now because they haven't really looked too much into it other than just basic overview. But yeah, that's interesting. We'll see how bad the dockyard grind is. They seem to have lowered it a little bit, but it's still 30 phases you have to complete. Or 32, actually, but only 30 you can do with the missions. So, yeah, and it's 3,000 doubloons. Was it 3,000 doubloons a phase, I think is what it was? Right, because you have to do a minimum of six. I gotta look this up to confirm this. Yeah, so I was right. It's 3,200 doubloons per phase. It is 30 phases, so you only have to complete 28 phases with the mission. So 30 phases, and then 3,200 doubloons per phase, so 96,000 doubloons to buy it outright. And, so 500 doubloons for the minimum package, and then times, 500 doubloons is 50 cents, I think? Yeah, was it 50 cents? 50 cents, yeah. $96. Oh my god. Man, why did they have to do this? Can't it just... I take that back. It's probably still cheaper because when they did outright sell tier 10s, they were going for like $123. So, actually, I take that back. You know, it's cheaper. So that's probably the best way they could do it. But yeah, I just gotta remember to go buy it. Anyways, back to the subject. What are we doing today? Well, we're going to be doing the Shornhorst, the Yoshino, and yes, we were looking at all the ships that I have that I got via Santa containers, because yes, I did cough up to $70 and bought a bunch of Santa containers, and I got Massachusetts out of it, which is cool because that's like an ultra rare drop. What did I get? I got the FR-25? Whatever the crappy Italian destroyers, and people say it's bad, and I was like, yeah, I mean, it looks really bad on paper, but, like, it can't be that bad. No, it's terrible. It isn't worth selling it for credits. It's so bad. Like, it's so bad it's almost comical. Like, and you can see, because the FR-25 is, like, what is it? It's got to be, like, what, 3-4 years old at this point, and it's got, like, 11,000 battles played over the entire... over the North American server, if you look at the stats and WoW stats numbers, it's pretty bad. What is it? What's that? What is that? I was gonna say, I thought they were introducing a new ship. It's just the, it's just another camouflage for, looks like, the Schlieffen. But anyways, time for the news, and I am so behind in this, it's actually funny. I've never been this out of the loop with World of Warships since I started playing, like, seriously around, like, 2019 or so. No, it was about 2018, so it's been, what is that, that's like 6 years since I've actually been this far out of the loop. And so they're introducing Commonwealth Cruisers, and I did actually look at these when they announced them. It was late last year. No, would have been like October, I think, maybe November, something like that. Anyways, and they looked decent. They were just basically British ships. So yeah, and it seems like they've pretty much panned out to be that way. They're pretty interesting. It looks like there's an Athresia class too. I mean, look, I've been waiting for Australian ships for a really long time, and I get there's Indian ships and things like that, but I don't really care about those. I want the Australian ships. So because I have the Perth and stuff, and I mean, they seem cool. I'd have to really look into it to see if they actually turn out to be what I think they're going to be, but you know, it seems like they have some potential, but there's definitely going to be a lot of weak spots there, and it seems like they are just bigger Perths, which is cool. There's a Piñata Hunt special event that I probably won't have time to play. It's a separate battle site, features specially decorated maps, has support consumables, you can complete missions and purchase them from the armory to gain access to more of them, and you have special piñata ships that you blow up and get access to more consumables or to advantages. Okay, weird. Yeah, Commonwealth event pass, blah blah blah. And I didn't realize this, but the support aircraft carriers are already in full, like they're already they have already left early access. That's insane. I was like, oh yeah, these are like 6 months down the road, and this was like in December, so it's basic, it's, we're getting like 4 months in. It's like, oh, it's like 4 or 6 months down the road, that, what, July before they get in? No, they're there now, and I haven't played, so I have no idea how these things have affected gameplay. I assume they have. They have smoke curtains. That's kind of interesting. So they're just aircraft carriers with smoke screens. That's pretty cool. Maybe, I don't know, haven't played. Different brawls, YouTube memberships, nice. They've updated the cost of that if you really like burning money. Ranked battles, blah blah blah, balance changes. Torpedo launching angles reduced by 1 degree for tone to prevent clipping into hull while aiming. Increased damage of all submarine active torpedoes by 15%. Okay, all right. Increased damage of acoustic torpedoes by for British tactical submarines by 5%. Or damage all submarine alternative torpedoes by 15%. By 5% for British tech tree. Okay, so they just buff subs. Nice. Alright, cool. Not really. Future changes. Battle sum container to the armory. Other changes. Just issue fixes. Okay. Alright, let's get into what we said we were going to get into. Alright, now back to the Scharnhorst. The Scharnhorst 43. Scharnhorst 43. This is an interesting ship. I remember saying that the Scharnhorst, actually I didn't even remember what I said in my last episode, was so long ago. I did get both the Scharnhorst 43 and the Scharnhorst from containers, so I do have both. I have played both, and I have set them up differently, and I want to clarify what you should do with the Scharnhorst 43. You should build the Scharnhorst for an average battleship build. It's pretty good as an average battleship. It's not as good as I thought it was going to be, which is a little disappointing. The guns are anemic at best, but the hull's pretty tanky. It's pretty fast. It's pretty maneuverable, pretty durable, so it makes up for it, and it reloads really quickly. The Scharnhorst 43 is interesting. It is an absolute menace in brawls. There is nothing at tier 7 that could take me down in the Scharnhorst 43. Me and one of my buddies went into brawls, so it was just two of us, and this was back in December where the brawls were three per team, so we had a random, and we didn't lose a brawl. Like, mind you, this is the Rank Amateur podcast, so none of my friends are particularly good, right? We do some pretty amazing things every once in a while, but, like, most of us are straight average, and we were unstoppable in this thing. You build for full secondaries on this, so, like, literally full secondaries. I'm talking secondary survivability, like, everything for secondaries. It's insane, because remember, these guns, even if you build into them, the main guns are out at range, are not very good. They're not very accurate. They're actually way less accurate than I thought they were. So they're practically useless past range of about 13 kilometers, at least in my experience. So if you just account for that and say, okay, well, I'm not going to really engage anything beyond 13 kilometers, why don't I build into everything that's going to make me a menace below 13 kilometers, and then see how that goes. And it turns out it works really well, because once you get to that range, it's kind of hard to miss. And yeah, you just end up eating things alive with your secondaries. And it works less well in randoms, or not as well in randoms. It still works really well, don't get me wrong. You just have to be a little more careful. But with in brawls, you can basically just bum rush the enemy team, and there's nothing they can do to stop you, because they can't kill you fast enough in most circumstances. The only thing you have to watch out for is torpedoes, but you also have torpedoes of your own, so most things that get within range to launch torpedoes or close to the range to launch torpedoes are also pretty much liable to be hit by you. So yeah, there's that. Basically, it's the king of drive-bys. It's the Hood, certified Hood classic, more or less. It just, you point straight at them, you just keep going and avoid the ramp, of course, and you just go straight past them, try and get some broadside shots into them, and then just finish them off with the torpedoes. It works excellently, flawlessly. Now, you can't really do that in randoms, but you can sit at max secondary range, which you can build out to like 11 kilometers, I think, if I recall correctly. It's like 11 kilometers, I think, and was it 9? It was somewhere between 9 and 11 kilometers. Here, let me build it out real quick in Shipbuilder here, and we'll see what the actual maximum range is. Okay, yeah, it looks like it's a 9.53 kilometer maximum range, which is more than enough for Tier 7. Granted, you're probably not going to survive a whole lot of battles in this thing, but you will do, like, insane amounts of damage, usually. Now, there's sometimes where there's a battle that just people end up just plinking shots from each other at maximum range, you don't really get much done. Yeah, that's unfortunate, but this is so much fun when it works, like, legitimately fun. Like, and I'm really glad I ground that out, because that speed boost makes all the difference, right? A 15% speed boost is awesome. It allows you to get into cover, allows you to charge people faster than they think you can, and it's goofy is what it is. It's really goofy. Now, you do have a 23-second reload, so yes, you are punished a little bit in the main battery guns, which is why I say you don't build into them here. They're not good enough. With that extra 3 seconds, it makes a big difference. And I think the Scharnhorst 43 isn't, I mean, I would argue it's probably better than the normal Scharnhorst, but not by much. They're different ships. They should be played completely differently, in my opinion. You should still build a normal Scharnhorst into main battery guns, or just like a general survivability build for a Scharnhorst is I find to be the most successful, because just you don't have that speed boost to get in and out of places quicker to improve your acceleration. Which, when you take the acceleration mod as to damage control, just turns out to be straight goofy. It is insane. It's a lot of fun, and I really hope you guys manage to get that ship. And that's the build that I would run it. I run on it all the time, have a lot of fun with it. Like you said, there's some downer battles, and sometimes you get a streak where it's like, really, should I really be building into this? And then you question yourself for a while, you play one more battle, and it turns out to be an absolute pizza party of fun. And you're like, yeah, that's why I build into this. The other one's more a bit more of a passive battleship build, but it still works out really well. In my opinion, Scharnhorst 43, more fun than normal Scharnhorst, but not better, if that makes sense. Anyways, we are going to go into sort of a little bit of a naval history section with the Yoshino. Yes, I did get the Yoshino. The Yoshino is the ship that I originally set out to get with my Cole, and then the Napoli became a thing, and then the Forrest Sherman became a thing, and then now I finally got the Yoshino, and I realized I should have gotten the Yoshino first. The Yoshino is awesome. It's like the first ship that I am really consistently good at. I shouldn't say the first ship, but like one of the few ships that I am consistently very good in, and at least for me, and I'm not Flamu levels of crazy, but like, or Flamboss, but I am definitely very dangerous in this ship, and it's a lot of fun, and I'll tell you why, and I'll tell you how I have a bit of an unusual build on it. Well, maybe not a super unusual build, but definitely something that a lot of people would argue against, and I will fight people, I will die on this hill. But yeah, let's get into it. So the Yoshino was a B-65 design battlecruiser. Here, let's see. Yeah, design B-65 cruiser. So this was essentially, it was supposed to be a replacement for the Amagi class battlecruiser, which also never got built. So there's that. But this was the whole part of the Japanese decisive battle doctrine, and this was an impression that the Russian incompetence in the Russo-Japanese War of 1904 and 1905, particularly at the Battle of Tsushima, that big battle, Russo-Japanese War, they adopted this doctrine is, we're going to build up to an unprecedented strength and then eventually just be able to wall up our enemies so bad they're going to go whimpering away with tails under their butts and just give up. They forgot they were battling the United States. Minor misconception on their part, but yes, this was part of it. And it was part of a 1942 fleet replenishment program designed to counter specifically the Alaska-class battlecruisers and the, essentially, what would turn out in World of Warships to be the Goliath. These British super heavy cruisers that they were planning on building and apparently got leaked or something like that, or Japan had a feeling that they were being built. So it was designed to counter it. So the Americans were the only people to actually build a super cruiser. That isn't quite a battle cruiser because it's not big enough to outgun everything it can outrun, but is big enough to outgun most of the things it can outrun. So it was like a partial battlecruiser in the terms that it had a more equal distribution of armor to armament, right? It had 12-inch guns, the 305s, and it had a decent amount of armor for the gun caliber. So it was essentially like a downscaled battleship, like the true definition of pocket battleship. They called it a supercruiser because it's not a battlecruiser. I will die on the hill that the U.S. Navy set the Alaska class is not a battlecruiser. A battlecruiser has absurdly large guns, usually 14, 16 inch or higher, and no armor. Right? Think hood. Think like probably a Amagi, really. I mean, although the Amagi was more of just a fast battleship. Think Constellation, or actually, no, think Lexington class, right? No armor, basically no armor, but huge guns. So it was the embodiment of the outgun, anything you can't outrun, and outrun anything you can't outgun. That's a battlecruiser. The Alaskas could not do that because Amagi exists. Because things like Yamato exist. I bet it could outrun a Yamato, but things like the Bismarck exist, right? And the Bismarck could definitely outgun an Alaska, and it could definitely outrun an Alaska as well, or at least become very, very close to outrunning an Alaska, right? There was only a couple knots discrepancy there, so it was more of a close matchup in terms of speed versus something like a New Mexico trying to run down a Nagato or something like that, or or the Bismarck itself, or just a cruiser in general, right? Like, the Mexico, traditional battleship, huge guns, huge armor, very slow, and a battlecruiser, no armor, huge guns, very high speed for its size. Anyways, the B-65s were designed to counter these new Alaskas, because the Alaskas were heavy cruiser killers, more or less. Because the whole thing was, we had light cruisers, then they had heavy cruisers, and then there wasn't anything to counter the heavy cruisers that wasn't a battleship or a battlecruiser, so they built supercruisers. And there wasn't... Japan was running low on battleships, so they would build supercruisers to counter the supercruisers, which were countering the heavy cruiser. Yeah, you see, it gets complicated. But yes, supercruiser counter. And these things were big. They were literally just downscaled Yamatos, effectively. Even there was a model built of it, a mock-up, which I cannot find the image of for whatever reason. It was a mock-up, and it's in a museum in Japan someplace. And now I can't find the original. There was a shipbuilder's mock-up, and I cannot find the image of it wherever it went. Which is really unfortunate, because I was going to describe it to you guys, but I can't find an official thing. So, yeah, but basically, it did look pretty close to the current Yoshino we have in World of Warships. And they were going to outfit it with a armament of 310 millimeter guns, the 1600 millimeter dual purpose cannons, Type 96 anti-aircraft guns all over the place, Hotchkiss machine guns all over the place. The belt was going to have just 190 millimeters armor, barbettes have 210, conning tower is 180, conning tower roof is 125, and the deck has 125 in the critical areas. Yeah, so, and it was going to have an endurance about 8,000 nautical miles, going to be 790 feet long, so yes, longer than the Iowa-class battleships, but much narrower at only 89 feet wide compared to the Iowas. I think it was 110 for the Iowas. So yeah, a lot narrower, a lot faster. It was only going to displace 31,000 tons, which for something its size was rather light, so it could maintain a high speed, and it could maintain 18 knots for those 8,000 nautical miles, and it was in the projected speed was in excess of 33 knots, so quite fast. I think it's a little higher in World of Warships, maybe closer to the 35 range. I'd have to double check that, but yeah. So essentially the Japanese Navy found that they needed aircraft carriers more than they needed cruisers like this. They were eventually canceled, but it is cool to imagine what the B-65s would look like. There was plan for just two of them, and yeah, they were going to be really interesting, but that's more or less the gist of it. They were supposed to counter the Alaskas and the proposed British super heavy cruisers, which were also never built, and they were eventually canceled, even though they were really far along in their design phase in favor of more aircraft carriers, which eventually was a wise decision for Japan, although they probably should have started building aircraft carriers in, like, 1932, maybe, actually probably earlier than that, to try and get obtain a larger fleet of them. Obviously, this would never pan out, and that's a whole nother episode. But yeah, so that is the design behind the B-65 cruiser. Now, let's look at it in World of Warships. So base, once you buy this thing, you are going to end up with some 300 glorious, and I mean glorious, 310 millimeter guns. For a while, these were the largest guns on a cruiser in the game. So it's been surpassed by, what is it? It's the Aegir, I think? Oh, no, it's the Siegfried. It's the Siegfried and, no, it's the Angrad is 305s. Yeah, the Siegfried and the Stezepol, I believe, has, 380s, I believe, is what's on there. But, yeah. So, main battery, you got those 9 310s. The range is a staggering 21.29 kilometers base. You got a 180-degree turn time of a pretty quick 36 seconds. Your ammo switch, or your loading time and the ammo switch time is 18.5 seconds, which for guns of this caliber is really quick. The HEDPM is a pretty good 148,865. Remember, these are larger guns that do not fire as fast, but they do hit very hard. The APDPM sits at 252,486 base. Your full salvo damage on your HE shells will be 45,900 damage, and yes, you will see at least 13k salvos, sometimes 17k on unsaturated targets. APDPM will do salvo damage will do 77,850. This works out to having 5,100 maximum damage for HE shells and 8,650 damage for your AP shells. They are quite potent. So the shell mass is 448 kilograms for both of these. The dispersion here is looking at 217 meters at 21 kilometers. Horizontal vertical is 130, and the sigma is a 2.05. Yes, it's very good. Very good grouping, very good dispersion. In general, an excellent ship at range. The Type 92 shells here, like I said, they have the 5,100 maximum HE damage. They'll come out of the muzzles at 836 meters per second. They have a penetration of 52 millimeters. Yes, this is not a Goliath penetration. It cannot penetrate the Kremlin's deck. It cannot penetrate some battleship's deck, so you will have shatters, unfortunately, even with the 310s. A single shell, however, has a 27% chance of starting a fire, which for guns that reload explode in 18 seconds is pretty good, because that's right in line with the Goliath. Actually, I think it's a little more than the Goliath. The Goliath has about a 25%, but it does have that extra turret. Full Salvo has a 94% chance of causing a fire on target, minus any of the target's fire chance reducers. For the AP Type 92s, I said that damage is a pretty good 8650 on there. You have an initial shot velocity of the identical 836 meters per second, 21 millimeters of overmatch. Yes, 21 millimeters of overmatch, which means you can overmatch British cruisers, I think, yeah. Or those have 25? No, because those have 19 millimeters of plating. Yeah, so you can overmatch a lot of plating that's found on weird portions of ships, specifically superstructures, some light cruiser bows and things like that. And let's see, you have a ricochet angles of your standard 45 to 60 degrees, and an arming threshold of 52 millimeters of armor, so yes, over-penetrations are sometimes likely with this, especially with aiming at destroyers, but you'll have the HE loaded most of the time anyways. The fuse timer is not 0.033 seconds, and what this means is that, yes, the AP on this actually slaps, literally and figuratively. Do not forget about the HE on this ship if you do have it. It destroys cruisers, and it will slap battleships too. You will chunk them for 10k, 15k at a time if they give you broadside. And you don't even really have to hit them that good. You can just hit the upper belt, and it will chunk them. So definitely not something to forget about when you're around 15 kilometers on in. The torpedo launchers, yes, the Yoshino is unlike the Azuma at Tier 9 and does get torpedoes. You get 4x4, 6-10mm quad launchers. They have their standard 180-degree turn time. They do not really have good angles, unfortunately. They are actually quite terrible. You do have to show complete broadside to get them off, and there's only a few degrees where you can actually get them both torpedo launchers off at the same time. One primarily points backwards, one primarily points forwards, but that means that any angle your ship is at, you do have, well, maybe not any angle, but most angles your ship is at, you do have at least one launcher that's ready to fire. Unfortunately, you do have to go about 45 degrees off the bow or stern to actually get those torpedoes on target ready to fire. The reload time is 171 seconds, so yes, you're looking at almost 3 minutes reload time, but remember, these are the Type 93s that come with the Shimokaze base. They have a full salvo damage of 380,272, but remember, these are both on both sides of the ship, and they are the Type 93s, and they are the noob tubes. Yep, they are the Type 93 Mod 3s, or no, was it the Mod... Actually, they don't have the right thing in the ship builder. That is unfortunate. Was it Type 93 Mod 1s, I think is what it is. Yes, they have a 20-kilometer range. That is correct, 20 kilometers. Now, you do have a choice between the Mod 1s and the Mod 3s. You should never choose the Mod 3s because they only have a 12-kilometer range. Now, they do have a visibility of just 1.7 kilometers versus the, I think it's like 2.5 kilometers that the noob tubes have, and they're named noob tubes because that's the first ones you get unlocked on the Shimokaze. But yeah, so they do not have as long of range. They do an insane amount of damage, 23,000 damage a hit. Arming distance of 180 meters on both of them. It gives you a reaction time of like 13 or 15 seconds on the Mod 1s, and on the Mod 3s you get 9.45 second reaction time. There's a choice here. I'll get more into detail later on, but you should only choose the Mod 1s, the 20 kilometer noob tubes, and people are going to get very upset with me about this because of the fact that they're noob tubes, but I will tell you why. Secondary battery is actually not too bad. It does have the 100 millimeter guns, the insane rabid dog guns that are found on the Akazuki, Kitakaze, and Harugamo. I almost forgot those. How could I possibly forget those? And yes, they're very good. You'll never use them, which is quite unfortunate, but like, there are meme builds with secondary battery Yoshinos. They do kind of work in brawls. they don't really work in randoms because you get nuked on the way in, and there's more about that later. I wouldn't recommend building into it. That's why I'm not going to really go over it. But yes, it does have 8 turrets, 2 guns each, 100 millimeters, 65 caliber, Type 98 Model A mounts. AA defense is a joke. Don't take defensive AA for whatever reason. It comes equipped by default. Hydroacoustic search is way more useful. You do have an 8-kilometer ASW airstrike, which is nice. Your concealment is garbage, but it doesn't need to be good. I mean, well, actually, for a cruiser, its size, remember, it's almost 900, it's over 900 feet long. So yeah, it's almost 900 feet long, and it only has a 14.65 kilometer detection range. Oh, excuse me, no, it has, it is over 800 feet long, 808 feet. So yeah, it is very large. And after firing guns and smoke, you'll be a visible 11 kilometers away. But you don't really need good concealment. And, okay, I shouldn't say you don't need good concealment, but you don't need great concealment in this ship, if this makes sense. And it does do 34 knots in a straight line. The max reverse speed is going to be 13.4 knots. The rudder shift time is mediocre, 13.87 second rudder shift time. The turning circle is, as expected, unimpressive, 920 meters for the minimum radius. The time for max speed full ahead is 68 seconds, and full reverse is 63 seconds. Remember, these are unmodded. Ship HP is a decent 61,800 hit points. Fires, I've series 4 of them, DPS per fire is 185, so it'll do 11,000 damage per fire, and flooding will do 12,000 damage per fire. We can go over more detailed things as far as like ship HP per section, but I don't want to bore you guys at all. Let's get into the build. Okay, so pretty much everyone knows that the Yoshino is exceptionally good at range, so we're trying to accentuate that trait with the build we're going for. So what do we have? We have main armaments modification 1 for the upgrades, damage control system modification 1, aiming systems modification 1, damage control systems modification 2, concealment system modification 1, and main battery modification 3. For our consumables, we are going to be running, obviously, damage control, repair party. We're going to be running our spotter plane because having 26 kilometer range is gangster. And we're also going to be running hydroacoustic search. For our captain skills, I recommend running Yamamoto Isoroku on here if you can. He is quite good, really. I mean, he's good on any Japanese ship, but particularly the ones that act from range. So we're going to be running Grease the Gears, Gun Feeder, because you will be switching shell types a lot, Priority Target, Superintendent, Survivability Expert, Adrenaline Rush, and Concealment Expert. So that's like your 17 points or so. I wouldn't recommend running Top Grade Gunner because, well, actually, you can, but you really shouldn't have people in your detection range. This is a long-range ship. It is not a short-range brawler, really. You could run radio location. That might be decent enough. There is quite a few ways you could go with this, but a lot of people tend to spec into the main battery guns. A skill like Outnumbered might work pretty well, too, because that's the one where it proves your ship's characteristics. When the number of allies within your ship's main battery fire range does not exceed the number of visible enemy ships, as you tend to be kiting, this tends to be used a lot. It improves your main battery shell dispersion. So that will get you to a full 21-point commander. I'm just going to go with the 17 for now, which is what I actually have. So this improves your detectability is going to go down to 11.88 kilometers, which is just very sneaky for a ship this size. Your maximum speed is going to increase. Actually, I forgot to say flags. Pretty much standard flags. We're running Juliet Charlie, India Yankee, Juliet Yankee Bissell 2, India Delta, November Sierra Mike, November Foxtrot, and Sierra Bravo for the hydroacoustic search boost. Most important thing is that gets your detectability down really low. Your fires now will only be doing 8,000 damage, and floods will do 9,000 damage. And yeah, what else did we improve? I forget. And yeah, and then also you have Adrenaline Rush, which is really useful on this ship as well. Your survivability expert's going to improve your maximum HP to 66,300, which is very respectable and very necessary. The reason why is because this ship has no armor. Remember when I said that the Alaska wasn't really a battlecruiser? You could argue pretty strongly that this is a battlecruiser because it has big guns and no armor. Like, pretty much no armor. I would say, if you get hit, plan on being citadeled. If you get hit by anything larger than a Des Moines, and even sometimes with a Des Moines, plan on being citadeled. Do not ever go broadside, because you will get deleted. Even from 66,000, I've seen Yoshinos be deleted. Is it kind of rare to be full health to no health in a Yoshino? Yes. Does it happen a lot more than normal cruisers? Yes. Yes, it does. So, what are we doing with Yoshino? What makes it so good? At range, it is a filthy rat. It is the most annoying ship to deal with in the game, right? You're sitting back at like 17 kilometers, 18 kilometers, and you're just dunking on people with HE, setting 2 fires, 3 fires a salvo, sometimes knocking them for 10k a salvo if they're unsaturated. Consistently, I might add, and as soon as they show broadside, you slap them with the AP and send them back to port. It is a filthy rat of a ship, and I love it so much, and it's why it is really good. Now, it does not like getting shot back at. I will add, it takes, like, if you're the only person on a flank, hopefully you're good at maneuvering your rudder, because it ain't going to be fun. Now, a fun trick that this ship has is, because everyone thinks that no one on the Yoshino would possibly be dumb enough to take the Type 93 Mod 1s, or just the standard Type 93s, they don't think there's torpedoes coming away from 18 kilometers away. They think they have to be closer, 12 kilometers, 10 kilometers, right? 8 kilometers. There's no way the Yoshino has 20 kilometer torps, right? Wrong. Right, you equip that, and you just send the torpedoes out wherever. These aren't torpedoes you save for those dire circumstances where you need to kill something. No, your launchers should be empty all the time. Remember, there's no friendly fire anymore. There is no risk in just sending torpedoes out wherever you have an inkling that there may be an enemy. My favorite thing to do, as soon as they're loaded, right at the beginning of the game, just send them down the flanks. Send them down the flanks, and people, they take like 2 or 3 minutes, 4 minutes to get to their range. I forget what the actual time is, but they take minutes to get to their max range. People will have forgotten about you, they will have forgotten about your torpedoes, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I just killed something. 3 hits, right? And it's like, well, they should see it from 2 kilometers away. You'd be surprised how dumb most people are. I've landed full salvos to torpedoes like 18 kilometers away, and people should have seen them coming from miles away, but they don't. And it also is good for flushing out those campers, because you approach, remember, your detectability is 11 kilometers. This thing can stealth torp by 9 kilometers. Almost 9 kilometers. So you approach within that range, and you flush them out. So they sit at the flank, and they're just in open water sniping. They will eat your torpedoes unless they move. And if they're a big thing like a Vermont, they're just going to eat your torpedoes. And remember, these things do like 20,000 damage. The longer range ones do 20,967 damage, with minus the damage reduction. Insane. It is awesome. I love doing that. And sometimes you'll just catch a random destroyer in a smokescreen. Like, I remember I fired my torpedoes, and then like 2 minutes later I get a kill. I was like, the ship I'm shooting at is still there. And look at the kill feed. I killed the Shimikaze across the map. It is glorious what this thing can do. Yeah, how do you play this thing? How do you think you play it? It's probably one of the easiest ships to play, assuming you have situational awareness and don't overextend, right? You sit between 14 and 20 kilometers, even longer than that with the spotter, and you just farm. It is glorious. It is so much fun to play. You get kills, you're a filthy rat, and it's awesome. I love being a filthy rat. But yeah, so utility? Not really. I mean, at the end game, the hydroacoustic search really does surprise people. I've had destroyers who try to flank around by the aircraft carrier, and I'm, you know, a filthy rat who sits by the aircraft carrier, and they think they have the aircraft carrier by themselves, but they get within 11 kilometers, and they're like, ooh, I can kill those Yoshino, he's not paying attention. I am paying attention. And I see that I'm detected when I shouldn't be detected. So then I fire up the hydroacoustic search and they creep within that range and they get spotted. And it's awesome. And the torpedoes get spotted. I avoid the torpedoes. I kill them with one salvo. Because yes, this thing will do that. It eats destroyers for breakfast. And that's it. Right? You kite. Even if you're pushing, you push forward and then you kite. And then you push forward and then you kite. And then you push forward again. And guess what? You kite. That is what this ship is good at. And guess what? If things get hot, you go undetected. You go undetected, literally just sit there for like 45 seconds to a minute, let people forget about you, pop up in a different location, start farming them. Then they get annoyed with you, and they start shooting at you again, go undetected. This is how filthy the Yoshino is. It is awesome. And then you just appear up, like, middle of the map, or if you were in the middle of the map on the flank, and you start farming again, and then eventually they'll show broadside because you like flank them or something like that, and you start hammering them with the armor piercing, and then they turn to shoot at you, you go undetected again. Right? You should never ever be within this ship's detection range, which is why I say you should never run the mod 90 type 93 mod 3s, because you'll never use the torpedoes, and that's one of this thing's big selling points is the torpedoes. And if you never use them, that's tons of potential damage you're missing out on. And some people, it's like, oh, it's noob tubes. I refuse to run those because everyone can see them from super far away. The torpedoes are not meant to be a primary armament that consistently hit. They load, you fire them. They load, you fire them. Right? You're not supposed to... They're only preemptive. That's literally the only purpose of the Yoshino's torpedoes, is preemptive. And when you're about to die, you just dish out all the torpedoes possible, and then you get... just a flesh wound award really easily because someone forgets about your torpedoes and runs into them, or comes around the side of an aisle and eats a face full of them. That's literally, it is awesome. I love this ship. I can't believe I got the Napoli before this. Don't get me wrong, the Napoli is really fun. Oh, actually, I got the Pomeran before this too. Don't get me wrong, the Pomeran, the Napoli, they're really fun. They're a lot of fun, but this thing's awesome. Like, if you were going for a coal ship right now, this is probably the one I would start with, especially if you're a newer player, first coal ship, right? This will teach you how to dodge rounds, dodge shells, because you will die very quickly if you don't pay attention to where your ship's positioned and stuff and who's firing at you. But it's also a ton of fun when you play it really well. Goliath players, get this ship. I know it's really similar to the Goliath, but it's different in that it's longer range. It's not as tanky, but it's just as fun. And the torpedoes, insane. I love it so much. I love playing, and I have that special camouflage they were handing out at Christmas that you could get for the special tokens or whatever they had. So yeah, I love it. I really, there's pretty much nothing bad I could say about this, especially with survivability expert. The heals are goated. I really, because it's got not 0.6% or not 0.5%, so it's standard, but like, it's a 28 second heal. Like, it's standard, but the max HP, you can heal back 11,000 damage potentially with this heal. And you get 5 charges of it if you take Superintendent. And then you have the spotter aircraft and hydroacoustic search and stuff. It's really special. I love this ship. Oh, side note. I did look in my World of Warships profile. I got the Huron. I got the Lazo. I got, like I said, I got the Massachusetts Scharnhorst 43, the Scharnhorst. And I got the Duca de Aosta, which isn't great, but is also not as bad as people make it out to be. You have to play very passively in it, though. It's got good rate of fire, it's got really good shell velocity and stuff, although it does have a really bad drag coefficient. Nothing I would recommend buying, per se, but if you manage to get it out of a container or something like that, Christmas container, super container, something, I would hold on selling it, because it does have some potential. Anyways, Huron is probably coming up soon, because that ship is an absolute beast. I am a little disappointed it doesn't have a smoke screen. Does it have a smoke screen? Oh my god, it's been so long since I played this thing. I could have swore it didn't have a smoke screen, but yeah, you can see how long it's been since I actually played this. Yes, it doesn't have a smoke screen. It has a heal. Destroyer heals, I will maintain, are a joke. And people are like, oh, it gives you a little couple extra hit points. It gives you like 2,000 out of, and if you build for survivability, it's out of 15,000. So I guess it's like percentage wise, it's probably the same, but like, you have to think that's one HE shell. And be like, oh, it makes all the difference. I'd much rather have a smoke screen. Give me a crawling smoke. I don't care. Like, crawling smoke actually in a story is pretty good. Give me something. Give me full speed. Like, give me something else. Radar? I don't know. Like, the heal just doesn't do it for me. Like, unless it's, like, where you can heal back, like, half your health as a destroyer, it doesn't really make much of a difference. Like, it's the same percentage-wise. Yes, I understand it's the same percentage-wise. Percentage-wise, though, it is 2,000 hit points. Like, 2,000, maybe if you have a good one, 3,000. One HE shell. Whatever. You know what? Whatever. It's fine. But, I mean, the rest of the ship is pretty good, except for the turret traverse is garbage. But we'll get into that in a later episode. Like I said, new episode, shorter form format. This one's a bit of an exception, though, because I did two ships in it, and I also was detailing where I've been. I am back, hopefully, don't count on it, weekly uploads, maybe. Try and at least stick to a minimum of the bi-weekly, but not bi-weekly, fortnight or bi-monthly. Yeah, so that is what we're going to shoot for today. If you do have any questions, comments, concerns, or requests, please do email me at rankamateurpodcast@gmail.com. And please do tell your friends about this. Tell your friends that I am back. I had my temporary hiatus, but I am back doing what I'm supposed to be doing and what's fun for me. So the goal is no more hiatuses, but we'll see how that pans out. Anyways, that's all for me from this week. And I hope you enjoyed it. Hopefully you got some educational content out of it. And until next time, captains.